Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
No Ashton.
Oh, peace at last.
She's got the holiday plops.
Oh.
So she's plopping all over Europe at the moment.
She is.
I hope she's having a nice time plopping,
mm-hmm.
you know, quite yeah. frankly. She made a huge deal about the fact that this is the first podcast she's missed in forever.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that you and I did about a year and a half, 2 years worth of podcasts without missing one. But that's fine. Well done, Ashton.
Yeah,
good
well
job.
Done, good
job.
For you.
Hope you enjoy your week off that we couldn't have when you weren't here. Mm-hmm. So anyway, enjoy your lovely holiday.
Yeah, who do you think you are?
Welcome, everyone.
Yes.
To the video game podcast known as the Triple Jump Podcast. We hope you're well. We hope you're having a wonderful time. Each and every week, we're sponsored by a very real video game adjacent sponsor.
Really?
On this podcast. We are, yeah. Helps us keep the lights on that one. The one that's flickering.
Yeah, the one
actually,
that is actually flickering
at the
a
moment.
Little bit in our eyes.
I have the ad read here. This week, we're sponsored by Sniper Elite 5. It's a spin-off
right.
from Sniper Elite
yeah.
where you can hunt tiny Peters.
Ah.
Just a field full of frolicking tiny Peters.
Sniper Elite 5.
Sniper Elite 5, yes.
Okay.
It's not the fifth Sniper Elite. It's just this is a spin-off of Sniper Elite 5.
So right.
Just the 5
still
on there.
They still keep the 5 in there.
So you got any questions about that?
How many Peets are there?
At least five, yeah. At least five. So that's pretty exciting.
And are they real ballistic rounds or is it just like paint?
They're explosive rounds.
Oh.
So when they go in, the peats sort of pop. You pop the peats.
Right, pop the peats.
Yeah, it's pretty gruesome actually, but
I don't think I'll be playing that.
It's good, I will.
Okay.
It'll be good fun, I think. It'll be a good laugh. Or it would be if it was real.
Oh, thank God for that.
It's not real. You're safe for now.
Oh, for now.
For now, you are safe.
Well, arguably, I'm less safe because people don't have an outlet for shooting peats in video game form. Mm. So they might choose to do it in real life.
Right.
Whereas if they had the game, they could just sort of get their frustrations out on the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in trouble, is what I'm saying.
Tubbs, you are in trouble. Tubbs. No, we're not sponsored by Sniper Elite 5, where you hunt tiny Peters. We're sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you could submit questions to this podcast. But there's loads of other tiers available, loads of other rewards available. After this, we're recording After Dark, which is our bonus podcast, where we talk about anything but video games.
Yes.
People seem to enjoy that. That's nice. Come and support us, and you can get access to all of them. We're recording the 19th one.
Is it that? Are we on 19 already?
How insane does that sound?
That sounds crazy. It doesn't feel like we've done 19.
It said on the podcast question post, After Dark 19, but I don't believe that that's right.
I feel like we've done about 8.
Maybe half that amount. Anyway, Ashton listed the question post before
maybe it was
she went away.
And she accidentally put a one
on
front.
It. It could be episode 9. There's at least 8 episodes of After Dark.
At the very least.
You can come check them all out. But I was going to say we normally talk about Facebook here, but it's gone, isn't it?
Yeah.
No Facebook today.
No.
No post on Sundays.
No.
Bloody
letter.
You can go to triplejump.mp/cameo if you wanted to request a personal message from one of us. You could do that. That's nice, isn't it? Shall we get on with the questions, Peter?
Let's. I've got one here from Stephen Norrie.
Yes.
It says, we have, thankfully... Question mark in parentheses. Mm. Past the time of the ubiquitous custom plastic peripheral fad.
Right.
But given we are now in a world where pretty much every gamer has access to a fancy mobile phone, do you think some more second screen experiences would work in modern gaming, be it as an extra input device or some other gameplay extending function? Thank you, Stephen, for the question.
Thank you, Stephen, for the question.
I think this is a good idea. I think more games should use phones. Mm-hmm. It's probably not a good idea to ever make phones necessary for play in a game that, you know, a controller game, but then it says, you also need a phone.
You must have a phone.
You must have a phone to also do the extra peripheral bit. That's probably not a good idea. Mm. However, I think it could work pretty well for... We'll get the obvious stuff out of the way first, which is, you know, the likes of Playlink and Jackbox, yes, where you just use your phone as a controller. Yeah. That's really handy because it means you can have 8 people over to your house or however many, and you don't need 8 controllers. Mm-hmm. So that's a great idea. But in terms of kind of integrating the phone as a kind of an extension of gameplay, I think it could be cool to have like a little, you know, like a Pokedex, mm-hmm, or something. You know, like a little encyclopedia on your phone, or use it as a PDA, or you could use it as an actual phone. So there's like an app on your phone that you sign into when you boot up your game.
Yeah.
You link the session together on the Wi-Fi or whatever. And then say you're playing like Persona or something.
You could call a taxi in GTA.
You could call a taxi in GTA, or as you're walking around, instead of like the messages coming up on screen, like, hey, do you wanna go and get some noodles? You get a buzz in your pocket and you go, huh?
Flipping love noodles.
Yeah, me too. So I think that could be pretty cool. Just like having your phone, it would just kind of be slightly more immersive, or it would maybe not be immersive at all and it would distract you from the screen and you would be right, like, huh? Getting your phone out. So maybe it wouldn't work in the slightest. I'm not sure. And then also I thought it was worth mentioning that we were on the Pitch Please podcast.
Yes.
A couple of months ago now.
God, it's probably longer, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, longer than that.
When on earth
end
was
of
that?
Last year, was it, maybe?
Jesus,
or
yeah,
Or start
maybe.
Of this year, possibly. I'm not sure. But that is where you you go along and you pitch a video game idea to some knowledgeable people who understand how game development works, and they rip it to shreds, rightly so. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we came up with a kind of a horror game with... I always forget the name. What's that game called? That Nintendo game that had the kind of insanity mechanics. Requiem something. Insanity... Oh. Requiem?
I know exactly what you're talking about, but my brain's gone blank.
I'll maybe Google it when you're giving your answer. But there are various games that have insanity mechanics where it like plays with the volume of your TV, or there's that one in Batman where like the console crashes, and then suddenly like you've switched roles with the Joker. And, you know, you could do stuff like that. Our thing on Pitch Please was more like Steam integrated. So you'd be playing on PC and getting Steam messages from someone telling you to, like, back off, stop investigating this supernatural
spooky
situation,
thing,
whatever it was. But I thought, oh, you could have maybe done it with your phone as well. So as you're playing, someone's messaging you threatening things.
Yeah.
Abuse. Someone's abusing
someone's
you.
Someone's doxing you on Facebook.
Yeah. So... lots of ways you could use your phone, I think, and people should do it more.
Yeah.
I think. What do you think?
Well, this is one of the rare occasions where we actually disagree.
Oh.
Because while I love the idea of that, this was attempted like 7 or 8 years ago when smartphones were really starting to become ubiquitous. What's the name of the game? You got it there?
There is something called... No, hang on. That's not right.
It was a GameCube game, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Come on, I'll let you go.
Eternal Darkness.
Is that what it's called?
Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem.
There we are.
That's the one.
Got there eventually. Thank you for commenting it below and shouting at
us.
We didn't see it in time. Mm. This stuff was sort of pitched as an idea sort of around 2012, 2014, especially when the PS4 and the Xbox One launched. I remember Destiny had a companion app that I downloaded. I can't, like, they're all gone from my head, but I was definitely really excited about these companion apps, these apps that would let you view the map and potentially view your inventory and stuff. It's all good ideas, but it ultimately just became another thing that you've got to do, like another barrier to get the full experience of the game rather than just being able to play it. As much as I would like that to be an option, I do feel that if that's the if a developer's intended full experience requires you to have a phone app, then they've kind of failed.
Yeah.
Because it should all be, you know, you should be able to get the full experience from just booting up the game.
Yeah.
And I do love the idea of it. Like I was head over heels excited about, yes, about the companion apps when they were first doing them. And then they've all sort of fallen by the wayside. A game could come along like a horror game and really just take it to the next level. There have been some games. I think The Last of Us is factions mode, the multiplayer mode. Yeah. You could plug your Facebook in. And because there was sort of an element of keeping your survivors happy based on your performance in games, the survivors would be named after friends on your Facebook list,
right?
On your Facebook. So it would be like, Peter Austin has died.
Yeah.
Because he was too hungry. And then you feel sad because Peter Austin's died. Oh, yeah. Otherwise, it will give you generic names. There are ways to plug stuff in. You could even just enter your phone number into a horror game at the start and give it permission to send you texts or call you and there just be ghostly whisperings on the end.
Yeah.
That would be cool. I don't know if it requires a companion app, but I'm still waiting for a game to come along that really proves that companion apps are worthwhile. I like the idea, and it's better than the ubiquitous custom plastic peripheral fad,
yes,
that Stephen talks about. But they did. The industry tried this like 8 years ago, and it didn't work. And I would like to see it work, but as it stands, not going to download your companion app, man. I'm not going to do it.
I mean, I agree with you that I don't think this is a good idea for like the map or your inventory or, you know, something that you can just press the
menu or
the
whatever
menu button for, depending on what console we're talking about. But yeah, I still think maybe there's a layer of immersion that you could get out of this, like friends, in-game characters like messaging you saying, "Hey, do you want to like meet up?" Or "Hey, I've found something weird over here. Do you want to come and check it out?"
Imagine you're at work and Roman Bellick texts you and says, "Hey, bowling?" And you're like, "You have to stop. You have to stop. I'm at work."
I mean, probably only when the console is powered on and you're playing.
Right, okay.
Rather than just
at any time. He calls you at midnight,
yeah,
and asks you to go bowling.
Yeah.
Stop it, Roman.
But essentially, like some games have an in-game kind of messaging system or an in-game social media. And I think maybe just to like put that onto a device that your in-game character is probably using on screen to like look at their messages.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's any harm in that necessarily. But yeah, there's probably something out there, some kind of really cool USP that someone could bring along and knock it out of the park. But
yeah,
I agree that it should only be done in certain circumstances. And like, you shouldn't be getting a companion app just for the in-game map or, you know, stuff that has always been standard functionality with the controller.
I wouldn't mind an in-game map if it was my in-game map. So I could put markers on it and, like, you know, do various things and then it would show up in-game. But my experience with these companion apps at the time was that it was just the map. And you could just look at the map. And it's like, well, if I can't put markers on it that then show up on my map in-game, then what's the point?
What's the point?
Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the idea of companion apps a lot, and I would like someone to do it properly.
Mm.
But I can't help but feel like one game is going to take a really big swing at it. Like, it's an app, but it's the phone from in-game, so you can do stuff like you've said.
Yeah.
And then we end up talking about it in 5 years in a list of, like, games that took big swings that didn't land.
Yeah.
So I was like, isn't this an interesting idea that didn't really work?
Yeah.
But you know, we'll see. It's been a while since I've seen a companion app actually promoted by a prominent developer. But if they come back into fashion, I'd give them a go.
I mean, Stephen rightly compares it to peripherals because a lot of peripherals are, broadly speaking, are interesting ideas. Like, here's a gun or, you know, a steering wheel or whatever. Or, you know, some more interesting ones like the chainsaw controller. No, that's not a good, that was never a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there have been peripherals throughout gaming history where on paper it sounds like, oh, that would make you feel like you're in the game.
Yeah.
And then because it doesn't work or because it's just easier to use a controller, it's like, oh, no, that fell flat on its face.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Well, it's time, Peter.
Yes.
And Ashton's going to be kicking herself here because she's missing out on a section that we've never done before.
A brand new section.
I think you've got it written down there. I can't really pronounce it. It's a bit tough to say out loud.
It's called What We Play in.
That seems right.
Yeah.
It's what we play in time. Time to talk about what we've been playing.
Yes.
Peter, what have you been playing?
Well, at time of recording of this podcast, the only thing I've really played this week on my own, solo, is more Lego Star Wars. I've nearly finished the story of the whole thing now, the sequel trilogy.
You still loving it?
I'm having more fun. So you may or may not be aware, my stream this week was not Lego Star Wars.
Yes, I did see.
I did two sessions of it on stream. And then I thought, this doesn't feel like, I mean, it's a phrase I have taken to using, a spectator game.
Okay.
Like a spectator sport.
Right.
But a game.
Yes. People watching you systematically destroy everything in every level.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, or not. That was the choice I had, is either destroying everything in every level, which is probably not particularly thrilling, or not doing that, which meant I was just missing out on a lot of the game. And I was just going from point to point through story plot points. And, you know, I thought this, I don't think this is a very streamable game. Arguably, I'm now quite keen to stream the complete saga rather than the Skywalker saga, which was the 1-6, because I think that is a bit more, you know, there's more to that.
Is that on Steam? Like, can you still buy that? Because I know it's stranded on at least PS3 as far as PlayStation goes.
Is it on Steam? Did they ever come out on PC? I'm not sure whether the Lego games were on PC. But I'll be able to, I mean, it was on PS2 as well, I think.
So, probably, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I had it on PS2, so I could emulate it or bring, I might even still have my copy, I don't know.
Ooh.
But, you know, that has a more, it's a more linear experience. You unlock more characters more quickly, I think. And it's always quite interesting when you finish a level seeing that, ooh, who have I got now? It's Yariel Poof. Sorry, Yariel Lin.
I beg your pardon.
So, I'm not streaming it anymore. But playing it at home on my own, and now I'm going off the beaten path a bit more. I've decided I'm not just going to, like, beeline for the end of the story, which is what I've been doing all the way through. I thought I'd just finish all 9 movies, then go back. But now I have been just going off and doing little bits and bobs, and I'm enjoying it more doing that. So I think that's probably the way to play. But yeah, it didn't seem like a streamable game anymore, I thought, which is a shame.
That is a shame.
So I've been playing that. We played some games round your house.
We did.
With various members of the team. Perhaps you will want to talk about those. But also at time of release of this podcast, I will have played some KO the Kangaroo. The new mascot platformer game based on it's a character who's been around for a while.
Gaming legend.
Yes.
An icon.
I think he launched on a Sega console some time ago. I'm not sure which one, actually. I'll have to look that up when I do my review on it. But at time of recording, I've not played it. But given the code today, and embargo is tomorrow. That's Friday. But I'm going to be off work until next week. So you'll have to wait till Wednesday to hear my first impressions. But then I might stream a bit of it as well. So you'll be able to see it in action.
Yes.
But that's what I've been playing.
Excellent. I have been playing a little bit of Borderlands 1 in co-op. I know that game like the back of my hand now. And here I go playing it again.
Yep.
I have also been playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. As threatened last week.
Yes.
Finally playing through it again on PS5. It is so good. I'm just enjoying it a lot.
Good.
Like really, really just, I just like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
I should write a review, shouldn't I? I like it
a lot.
Maybe you should get me a thesaurus perhaps, but I do like it a lot. And I know I enjoyed it a lot the first time around, but I don't know. It's been long enough, I think, for me to re-experience it and kind of forget little aspects of it.
Right.
And now coming back to it, I think I can appreciate just how well they managed to make the first portion of a much bigger game feel like a standalone experience.
Right.
In terms of fleshing out characters and, you know, adding story elements and side quests and all the different functions and systems in there. It just works really well. I think I'm about halfway through it now, or maybe two-thirds of the way through it. And then I'll be playing the DLC that came out, story expansion, where you get to play as Yuffie, who you do not meet this early on in the original game. So I'll be interested to see how that works.
You never played that?
Not the expansion,
no,
because I was waiting to play through it again,
right,
in order to do that. So I will maybe get to that before the next podcast. Maybe not. I'm not entirely sure. But we've got a really long bank holiday coming up next weekend.
We have.
Because of the Queen.
Because the Queen turns 100 or something.
She does.
I'm not sure.
I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah.
She's 10,000 years old. Mm. And so we get Thursday and Friday off.
Yes.
And that'll be lovely. So I might play some more then. But apart from that, yes, I turned 30 last week.
Mm, and congratulations.
Thank you. It's a big milestone. Where's my bank holiday?
I don't know.
Quite frankly.
Incidentally, you say we'll be off on Thursday and Friday. I will be in on Thursday and I will stream in
yes.
the usual slot.
So. Peter will be in on here. So for the joint stream slot, catch him outside. How about that?
Yeah.
I turned 30. I had a couple of people over. It was really lovely.
It was lovely.
The main event of the evening, though, was who pressed mute on Uncle Marcus?
Who did? We know now.
We do know now. And it's a shame, that, again, that Ashton is not here because she was extremely excited to play Who Pressed Mute on Uncle Marcus. And this was your first experience with a Wales Interactive game.
It was, yeah.
How did you find the quality of acting, the writing, just presentation-wise? What did you think? Did it live up to the hype?
It was very silly. The writing was definitely... The scenario was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would never, ever happen. Or even if it... In the highly unlikely event that it did happen, there were things missing from... I don't think it... So the premise... I can talk about the premise.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. As long as you don't say who...
No, I will not say who did press mute on Unky Marky.
That's fine.
But so the premise is that your Uncle Marcus rings you up on video call and he has been poisoned, right? And he's dying.
Yeah.
And he's
seemingly just alone in his house with no medical assistance whatsoever. He's just committed to dying.
So
basically,
he gives you context. He's saying like, oh yeah, they say I'm dying of poison. I need you to find out who poisoned me and what they used, because there was like a family event he was at, and he's narrowed it down to that.
Yeah.
But he keeps talking about like, oh, the doctors say this and the doctors say that. And then like about halfway through, he looks even more unwell. And he's like,
there's a death meter that goes down every so often.
Yeah.
There's just like a life meter that is Uncle Marcus creeping closer to death.
Yeah. And he starts off in a chair and he keeps like video calling you all the time. And then about halfway through, as he's really flagging, he ends up in like reclined in a bed with a heart monitor in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But at no point do you see any medical professionals with him. And it's like, why has he just been left to die?
I don't know.
What's going on? So that whole part of it, the scenario was just laughable. The characters were just silly caricatures.
Yeah.
But
of the most awful people.
Way. Yeah, the most awful people.
Imagine.
The mum was just the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think someone like the aunt, who was also not very nice, would be the worst person in that family. But no.
No.
Your own mother... is just...
They're all terrible
horrendous.
In their own ways.
Yeah.
The Uncle Marcus was played by the actor from The Office who did... oh, God, what was his name? What was his name in The Office? His character's name in The Office. He was...
I've only seen the UK Office. I'm afraid.
Look at you, purist. He was the boss of Steve Carell.
Right.
Steve Carell's character. I'll look him up now. Let's see. I'm going to do it. Here we go.
I'm trying to remember the name of the UK one, because some of the names sound very similar.
Who pressed mute on Uncle Marcus? Let's see. There's no Wikipedia page for it, which is understandable.
You might be better searching for The Office.
here we go. I think we've got it. Every year, Abby's mum has a family quiz on her birthday. It's a long-held tradition, one that brings the whole rich and eccentric family together. And one that Abby dreads. But this year's quiz comes with a shocking difference. As it's about to begin, her beloved Uncle Marcus tells her that he's dying and someone in the family has poisoned him. Abby is the only one he can trust. You must find out who the murderer is before it is too late. Starring Andy Buckley from The Office.
Right.
Who played... Now I've got his name. I can look him up. Andy Buckley. David Wallace.
David Wallace.
David Wallace. That will mean a lot to some people.
Right.
David Wallace was Michael Scott's boss in The Office.
Yeah.
So
I know the equivalent from the UK.
His acting in... Well, I think we can say that we failed.
Yes.
And so we did get to see Uncle Marcus die.
Mm.
that acting was some of the best acting I've seen in a video game in my entire life, ever. In fact, it's just some of the best acting I've ever seen.
Ever. Give that man the Oscar.
Give it to him.
The best bit is that he, again, when he dies, if you don't get it right, he just flatlines in his bed. And then he's just still on the call.
He just stays there.
Because he would be.
Dead on the call because he can't hang up. Yeah.
Really close to the camera. Just
just like mouth agape.
Mouth agape. No doctors there to say time of death. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But, you know, that's kind of what I was promised. And, you know, and even just the fact that people kept like going into private calls.
Yeah.
But like kind of secret, sometimes they'd be trying to do it like surreptitiously to like bitch about someone in the family. But like surely the people in the group chat would realize that two of them have briefly dropped out and then come back in again. But
it's like being in a Discord server, but having your own separate channel within it. That you're just like, what are they doing in there? Why have they dropped out of the main? Anyway, it is Wales Interactive. It is the purest Wales Interactive experience I could have possibly hoped for.
Oh, that's good.
It's all of the cheese and all of the ham as well.
Mm.
And also it was mercifully, which I was kind of worried about, a linear game.
Yes.
In that it just proceeds in a linear fashion and you make different choices as you go rather than you're a detective, you work it out. Here's all the information.
Ask
connect
questions.
The dots. Yeah, yeah. Which it wasn't that. It was just, it's like an
binary
hour long.
Choices.
Yeah, really, really simple. Cannot recommend it enough. Get people over, get drunk, play Who Pressed Mute on Uncle Marcus. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Best game I've played this year.
Whoa.
One of the best games I've ever played, full stop.
Top five games of the year.
Absolutely
December,
is.
January.
It 100% is.
Good.
That's what I've been playing.
Yeah.
It's time for question two.
It is.
This is from Fergus Jeffs. Hello, BP, pronounced boop, as Ashton is absent this week. Sorry to bring more corporate flip to your door, but here goes. Yesterday, this being Tuesday, Take-Two Interactive and Zynga completed the biggest merger in video game history for the price of $12.7 billion, with Take-Two CEO suggesting that this merger is a way for the company to become a leader in mobile gaming. Plus, there are reports out there suggesting that prolific studio buyer EA is now looking to be bought by a larger multimedia company like NBC Universal, Disney, or Amazon. Considering the number of corporate gaming deals which have taken place over the past weeks and months, can you see a way in which an increasing number of games and studios being overseen by the same select group of umbrella companies can be seen as a good thing for the video games industry? Or is it all doom and gloom? Or does any of this matter if the games are good enough? As two video game dudes with good attitudes, I'd like to hear your two cents. Your friend in obscurity, Fergus, Forgotten Media 141, Jeffs.
Thank you, Fergus.
Thank you, Fergus.
I saw the EA thing reported under a really strangely worded headline. It said EA looking to sell itself, which is
it's called sex work and it's real work.
Yes, and it should be regulated and legalized.
Yes,
perhaps.
It should.
So I mean, my short answer would be it's mostly doom and gloom. I think monopolies are not a good thing for the consumer. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But in trying to answer Fergus's question, I have dug deep.
Have you gone devil's advocate?
I've gone devil's advocate and tried to find some positives to this.
Positives. Yeah.
So, hypothetically, if Sony or Microsoft bought more big companies, say they acquired EA instead of Disney or Amazon or NBC Universal, at least they would maybe be able to add the back catalogs to their live services for games that they acquire the IP for, too. Mm-hmm.
Two four,
sort of preposition.
When's 2-4?
So that could be a positive for the consumer, possibly.
Yeah.
Also, the larger company. So if a smaller company is bought by a bigger company, they then have access to more resources. Hypothetically, it doesn't always work that way, but they might have access to more resources, more money, better infrastructure for things like servers and so on. Potentially, they could produce better products or bigger products, you know, increase the scale of things.
Yeah.
If you have several good studios who have been acquired by a larger umbrella corporation, those small studios can all work together to make a product and do their own specialism. So you do hear sometimes about acquisitions being made and someone saying, oh, this will be good because they're good at multiplayer and we're making this game already and we want them to come along and help us with our multiplayer because we haven't done much of that before or whatever. So
yeah,
It's good to get people in who have certain specialisms, but those are pretty much the only two positives
that
I
is
could
it.
Think of.
Yeah. I have a couple more to add to the advocate pile.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, these mergers will probably not affect the average game player at all.
That's true.
Not only will they be unaware, but they will still probably end up getting the games that they want, even if it's not developed by the same people.
Mm.
They won't know. They'll just get it and maybe think, oh, it's a shame. It wasn't as good as the last one. And then they'll go about their day.
Yeah.
They won't feel like it's a big injustice like the rest of us will
no.
because we're silly. But apart from that, I've seen some people say the big benefits of, for example, Microsoft purchasing Activision and Bethesda specifically,
I
mean, is that studios like Obsidian could potentially work on a Fallout New Vegas 2 now.
Right.
Where they couldn't do that before. Or, you know, you've got Sledgehammer, which nobody really likes to be, but you've got Infinity Ward coming in, or a Treyarch who could maybe have a stab at a Halo game.
Yes.
You know, there's potential marriages there. I mean, realistically, I think they're probably just going to keep them separate because they bought them to make Call of Duty, because that's where all the money comes from.
Yeah.
But even so, there are some nice dream scenarios you can think of where it's like, what if they worked on this IP that they wouldn't previously have access to? However, they could then suddenly be dissolved and put on support work for Blizzard games.
Yeah.
A la, was it Vicarious Visions?
Vicarious Visions is now pretty much support for either like Blizzard, WoW, or it might be Call of Duty. I think they, but yeah, whatever, yeah, whatever it is. They're
rubbish,
they're
isn't it?
No longer making fun, colorful platformers.
You also can't really argue with the fact that sort of the independent and varied voices that come from, and I say an independent company in, say, the Bethesda sense, they're not independent.
Not an indie dev.
Not an indie dev, but those voices and cultures, when they get gobbled up by a big studio, there's a real risk of them being affected, or people leaving, or just, you know, you can't do this anymore. We want you to do this now. And the whole corporate structure completely changing.
Yeah.
However, if we're talking about EA, who is notorious for gobbling up studios with their own culture and then ruining them, itself wants to be bought, you could also argue that that effect is lessened, because if they are bought, any studio cultures they already that existed before they were purchased by EA probably no longer exist in the sense that they did.
And maybe whoever buys EA will be able to stop them from dissolving any further companies that that EA already own.
I mean, you would hope, but who knows? It's just, I don't know. When everything's so connected, and we're not even talking yet about the sort of the scary money that's sort of filtering its way into the games industry at the moment. Like, there's a lot of Chinese Communist Party money making its way in. There's a lot of Saudi money making its way in, and that's kind of frightening as well, and poses big ethical ethical dilemmas for people potentially. I can't remember what the full name is, but I believe they just bought a 5% stake in Nintendo, which is kind of insane to think about.
And they already own stakes in some other
companies.
There's
a lot of
other
stuff. I think, I can't remember. It was the people who make Metal Slug, SNK, is the other one. Citation very much needed. So there's a lot of big money coming into the games industry, not just existing structures purchasing other structures, but, you know, external forces coming in as well. It ultimately is not going to affect the guy and the gal who buy Call of Duty and FIFA every year. The people we often say, this is the target audience.
Yeah.
They don't care about this kind of stuff. The only reason we do is because we know it's happening and we feel somewhat responsible, but we do feel affected by it, especially if a studio we like that made a game that we like, for example, Vicarious Visions, then just we learn that they are now working as a support studio on a game on games that are nothing to do with what they previously did.
When they've clearly got talent for their own thing.
It's just a shame. So I don't think there's many positives.
No, I've thought of one more that I think I actually said either last week or the week before when we had, must have had a similar question. One other potential positive, and again, it's very much devil's advocate for the monopolization, especially in the case of Disney acquiring perhaps EA or whatever, is that you can get your kind of multiverse crossover references and things. You know, if you think about the Chip and Dale movie that's just come out, I've not seen it yet, but I hear that it's got like... it's either over 100 or over 1,000 Easter eggs in there.
Wow.
It might not be 1,000, but I think it's over 100, which is still a lot.
Yeah.
And you look at something like multiverses. Now, whatever you think of that just as a concept or that genre, if you're not a fan of your Smash Bros. Style games, that's your own preference. But I quite like the idea that Shaggy Doo, or whatever his surname is, Rogers, is fighting Batman and... you know, other characters in it, Arya Stark. You know, it's weird, but I quite like that those things can happen if there's a good reason to make games like that. It could even be, you could have a more focused thing where you just take two IPs and do some kind of shared universe with a bit more, slightly more serious, not just like, here's loads and loads of characters all together, but like, no, here's almost like Kingdom Hearts, like Disney and Final Fantasy, and then there's an actual story and an actual universe with stuff happening. They could do that if they wanted to.
Yeah.
But again, devil's advocate for sure.
Yes. We, of course, want to hear what you think about this as well, because a lot of people rightly just go, I don't care. Why should that bother me? But I don't know. We're not done seeing these big mergers, so we'll just have to keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Well,
if there are any more mergers, though, it might be a bit strange, mightn't it?
It might be a bit strange. Might be a bit weird. It would certainly make the news.
Weird news.
Yeah, weird news.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Remember, you can submit your weird video game news to us on Twitter and Facebook. There's a post that goes up near the start of the week. Comment. Reply.
Do it.
Let us know.
We read it.
And we'll shout you out.
Bring them along.
We will. We do have to shout out, though, our podcast producers who went to patreon.com/teamtriplejump and supported us at a specific tier. Thank you so much to all of you. We're going to kick it off with...
with Nathan.
Josh Plain.
G.Y. Goliath.
Sean Legg.
Corey Duffill.
Ellie Nicholas.
Erica Hutchinson.
Melody L. Bonnet.
Katie Jarrett.
And Gabrielle Philippink. Thank you, podcast producers.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you. Peter, what's your weird video game news this week?
I have a weird video game news submitted by Samuel Benson. I believe on the Facebook post rather than the Twitter. This is from comicbook.com. And well, you're really going in there. Stay hydrated, everyone. And it's pretty weird, really. It's written by Logan Moore.
Okay.
And the headline is Kingdom Hearts referenced in Taco Bell Mexican Pizza commercial.
Okay. All right.
Right. So Square Enix's mega popular action RPG franchise, Kingdom Hearts, just got referenced in the most unexpected of places. A new commercial for Taco Bell. Yes, the American fast food chain has been out in full force to promote the return of the Mexican pizza in recent days. So much so, in fact, that it created an original song for the menu item that directly mentions Sora from the Kingdom Hearts series. Now, I could go on.
Yeah.
I'm going to prime you here because I just want it to be clear when it happens what is going on here.
Yes.
This is not a brand deal that they have made with Square Enix.
This is just something they've done.
They just mentioned Kingdom Hearts in this ad for no reason.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
In this new commercial for the Mexican pizza, a wrap was thrown together to highlight the many desirable qualities of the item.
It's the only way I want pizza described to me.
Indeed, in wrap form. Mm-hmm. While most of the lyrics talked about some ingredients found in the pizza-like food, a lone bar was thrown in that alluded to Kingdom Hearts. Specifically, the line in the song said, "We eat in all our order, key to my heart like Sora." Even though Kingdom Hearts itself wasn't directly mentioned by name, it's clear what this line in the brief song was referring to. You can watch the full commercial for yourself in the tweet embedded below.
You do have to remember that Sora was famously fond of Taco Bell. There's several points in Kingdom Hearts 3 where he just goes to a Taco Bell.
Gets a Mexican
and
pizza.
And sits there, yeah.
Yeah. Likely the funniest part of this whole situation is that not long after it was discovered that Taco Bell threw in a reference to Kingdom Hearts and Sora in this ad, the video game series began to trend on social media. And while Kingdom Hearts is a franchise that often causes a lot of commotion on socials, especially in light of the announcement of Kingdom Hearts 4, this is definitely one of the more unusual instances in which the game series has trended. Some fans joked that this crossover between Kingdom Hearts and Taco Bell is one that should continue in Kingdom Hearts 4. Others noted that because Sora is now in the real world in Kingdom Hearts 4, perhaps he could even come across a Taco Bell in-game. None of this is likely ever going to transpire in Kingdom Hearts 4, but it's still funny to think about. Mm. What are your thoughts on Kingdom Hearts being mentioned in this new Taco Bell commercial? Is this one of the most bizarre crossovers that you can think of? Let me know your own reaction to this whole situation either down in the comments, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at moreman12.
Are you just going to read the whole thing, huh?
Yeah.
Are you going to play the rap? Can we listen to it?
Yeah, we can. Here we go.
How long is it? Probably too long.
28 seconds.
Following up the rap about the line about Sora with cheese and beans. It's great.
Key to my heart like Sora.
Cheese and beans and cheese and beans. Brilliant.
Just threw it in there.
Absolutely,
it's like
inspired.
He'd sort of run out of... It's like he was making it up on the spot, freestyling.
Yeah.
And he desperately was trying to think of rhymes for order and was like, Sora. He's like, it's not relevant, but I'm just... That's what I've got to say. Key to my heart like Sora.
My car's a Kia Aura.
Exactly. Wait, Kia Aura, that's a drink, isn't it?
I think that's also maybe hello in... Kiwi.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm not entirely sure.
Kia Ora is too orangey for crows.
Maori.
So,
what's the language? What's the language?
Maori is certainly a culture. I don't know what the language is called. Might also be Maori.
Apologize to all of our New Zealand listeners.
Yeah.
For my display of ignorance there. There's a Kia something. Kia is a car brand.
It is. And Kia Ora is definitely an orange drink.
And Rita Ora is a singer.
Yeah.
How many degrees of separation can we get from that? Rye Vita is a delicious, good for you, healthy snack.
Yes. Whiskey and Rye is a line from a Madonna song. And,
yes.
Madonna was the name of the sort of the woman in that piece of art.
Yes. Women are famously absent from this podcast.
True.
This week. And we're back in the room.
Right.
Excellent. Would you like to hear my weird news?
Yes.
Okay. This comes courtesy of Bartek Kubica. Thank you, Bartek.
Thank you, Bartek.
It's from Eurogamer. And Robert Purchase. Real-life Polish Witcher school closes amid political concerns as licenses pulled by CD Projekt Red.
Oh. Well, that really... I was about to say no purchase necessary, but you can't really follow up.
That's pretty good.
That's quite the headline.
7 years, 40 editions, and 3,117 trained witchers later is the subtitle.
Wow.
The Witcher School live-action role-play events in Poland, one of which I attended in 2016, not me, Robert, I assume.
Robert the writer.
It goes down.
You do.
Have come to an end because of a contractual termination by CD Projekt Red over the use of the Witcher name. The exact reasons why are potentially political, but also unclear.
Surprising that CD Projekt had the rights to give them the Witcher name and not whoever wrote the books. Surely that's the original source material.
It is, yeah. I don't know why. Maybe they use imagery from the game, perhaps. I'm not entirely sure. There's a lot of Polish names in here. So for people names, I'm going to read their first names.
Yeah.
And there is a translation for the name of the company here. So Five Elements, the company behind the events, alleges that CD Projekt Red pulled the license because of a staff member's involvement with the ultra-conservative Polish Catholic organization Ordo Luris, which is anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ+, and rejects the idea of gender equality.
Okay.
Good people. Mm. The staff member in question, Ania, is the wife of... and then it's got the Polish name again, Five Elements founder, Dastin. And according to a Facebook post co-signed by brothers Dastin and Dominic, Ania worked as a lawyer for the company for around 2 years between 2017 and 2019. More recently, though, she was commissioned by Ordo Luris to work on the legal mechanisms for introducing and enforcing the vaccination obligation and the possible consequences of failure to comply with it, and the draft of a law penalizing illegal abortion, the Facebook post explained.
Right.
This involvement was brought to light by Polish media in February, in articles like this and this, and prompted Five Elements to contact CD Projekt Red with an explanation. It was then that the license was allegedly abruptly terminated. Mm. When the situation happened, we informed CD Projekt Red about it, which in response, without asking for any explanations, terminated the license agreement, the more recent Facebook post read. I asked CD Projekt Red for verification. It would not be drawn on particulars, but vaguely mentioned different reasons for the license termination. Here's a quote from CD Projekt. In February, we decided to end our cooperation with the organizers of the Witcher School, CD Projekt Red told me. And now the contractual notice period of 3 months has ended. For more context, this cooperation was about the LARP itself and potential merchandise tied to it. We do not provide further details on the matter. That's what they said.
Right.
So...
They're basically saying it's not to do with their political...
potentially, meetings. Or they really just don't want to be drawn into a conversation about it, potentially. I know that Poland is a very Catholic country, so there could possibly be... They could land themselves in hot water by taking a stance, probably.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting that that is confirmation that it's not to do with that, but that their line is...
Their line is that it's yeah, they don't want to talk about it, really. It then goes on to explain that Five Elements are apparently going to struggle and may face bankruptcy, but that they will be committed to setting up an original LARP in spring of 2023.
Right.
So, I mean, this was exciting because... apparently there's a Witcher school that you can attend and have been able to attend for a while. And then it now no longer exists as a Witcher school because of potentially some very problematic stances from certain staff members.
I guess they'll just rebrand it as like a beast hunter school.
Yes, maybe they can do a Monster Hunter one.
Yeah, Monster,
who knows? I mean, if you want to get into bed with a company like that, you can go for it, I suppose. But there we are. That's my weird news.
Mm.
It's time for question three.
Question three is from Nikki P, who says,
Nikki P.
Hello, Bap.
Hello.
Is there a gaming generation or era you wish you grew up in? I'm an old geezer and grew up in ye oldie Sega Mega Drive.
So old.
Days is the word missing there, or era, which was a great time. 2D Sonic, Streets of Rage, all round 90s chewed, etc. But I kind of feel too old for some things like Pokemon or 3D Sonic, which I perhaps would have liked more or have a greater level of nostalgia for if I grew up as a kid playing it. Love your work. Loves your work, it says.
Loves your work.
Loves your work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. I certainly don't feel like I was younger. I'm glad I grew up in the era that I did in terms of games I'm nostalgic for.
Mm.
But that's probably just because you can't possibly imagine feeling nostalgic for like late PS2, early PS3 games.
And yet some people are.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's kind of my point, is that it's quite difficult, I think, to put yourself in the shoes of, or you know, to be able to say, I wish that was my nostalgia, particularly something that's younger than you are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do wish that I was maybe just slightly older, you know, if I'd been born slightly sooner, so that I'd been old enough to kind of pick and choose my own consoles and games
mm-hmm.
in the period that was my childhood. So I've always wanted an N64. I used to play N64 at my friend's house. I keep saying that I'm going to buy one, but I kind of struggle to, I don't have the time for it now at the moment, but probably will eventually. But it would have been nice if I'd been, you know, maybe in my late teens when the N64 came out, or kind of my mid-teens, rather than a child, so that I could have, if I wanted one, I could have bought one,
yeah,
and not kind of relied on my parents either to let me have one and or to give me enough pocket money over months and months and months so that I could get one. Likewise, the kid who lived next door to me when I was about seven had a SNES. And he used to play, well, we used to play Donkey Kong Country. And I used to think that was really cool. I really liked the, you know, the sprites that they have in those games. And I always thought, oh, I wish I had a Super Nintendo and could play this game. So if I'd been just slightly older, I would have been able to just do it myself, get one, save up the money and buy one. So I certainly don't wish I was any younger. And I don't wish I was older to the point that my whole nostalgia had was kind of, you know, knocked off, and that I was more nostalgic for kind of NES games or whatever. But just to have that agency and independence to fully immerse myself in the stuff that I'm already nostalgic for, I think that's what I wish I had.
I don't wish, like you, I don't wish to have been born any later than I was. In fact, I quite like the period in which I grew up, because there were so many incredible games in the late 90s, which is when I first properly started playing games. I was old enough to really appreciate and understand games. Not necessarily appreciate, but understand them and enjoy them. And also, I'm quite glad of the fact that I am particularly nostalgic and have a modest collection of Game Boys, because it doesn't seem that many people put a huge amount of stock in Game Boys and are quite happy to just part with them for either free because they know me or for minimal money.
Yeah.
And that's great. Not because I intend on selling them on for a profit or anything, but the nostalgia is growing for that period. And Game Boys are getting more expensive, particularly Pokemon games are getting more expensive.
You're sitting on a gold mine.
I pretty much am, yeah. So I'm really happy with that particular area of nostalgia. I do wish, like you, maybe I was born slightly earlier so that I could fully appreciate the N64 and the PS1 a little more. But also, you know, we both just turned 30 and the inevitable march towards death will claim us all eventually.
Yeah.
And so I don't really want, I'm not really in love with the idea of fast forwarding myself to
being older,
3 or 4 or 5 years older than I already am.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I'm quite good with where I am, quite frankly. I've spent most of my career, if you want to call it that, trying to get into games and writing about games and covering games, pre-Triple Jump and What Culture and stuff, feeling like I was too young and feeling like I had just missed the boat. Yeah, almost feeling like I had to compensate for it, because all the people I looked up to and all the people who were professionals were in their sort of mid to late 20s at the time. And I was in my, you know, I was like 21 or something. And now I feel like an idiot, because clearly that cycle just persists for everyone forever. But at the time I was like, I wish I was a bit older. You know, I wish I was an adult with disposable income sooner.
Yeah.
So that I could cover and play and know more about these games than I do. But I think the fact that people do wish they were either born later or sooner is proof that good emulation and preservation are very important, so people can experience these games. It won't be quite the same as being in the pop culture zeitgeist of Pokemon Blue coming out or Spyro the Dragon coming out.
Yeah,
but they should be there and they should be readily available for anyone who wants to play them now.
Yeah,
which they aren't currently, not in their original forms, not particularly easily. So, yeah. That's my answer.
I suspect that, broadly speaking, most people would say, I wish I was slightly older so that the thing I am nostalgic for, I could have appreciated even more. I think that no matter like who you are or what year you were born, it was probably, maybe there might be a few people who are younger than us who would say, I wish I lived in the kind of the 90s or the 80s even, and had those games. But I think broadly speaking, most people, they have something in their head that they really like from a nostalgic point of view, whatever that is, because you like that thing, down to nostalgia, you look at that fondly and you probably think, if I'd been even just a few years older, I would have enjoyed that even more, no matter what that thing was or what period of time you're talking about. I think it's probably a fairly common answer you would get if you asked people this, no matter how old they were.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's no surprise.
Everyone's nostalgia is different.
Yeah.
You know, Ashton's is for the sort of DS period. Yeah. And that'll be the same for a lot of people. And people growing up now, they'll be nostalgic for their PlayStation 4s, their Xbox Ones, and Fortnite.
Yeah.
And that'll be their nostalgia. And we'll look at that and go, ugh, really?
What?
Gross. You can't put Fortnite in a display case and never play with it again like I can with Game Boys. So,
that's
you know,
thing.
Idiot. But there we are.
Mm-hmm.
Those are our answers. It's time for something rather large.
Yep.
Some might call it the large discussion.
Oh.
But they'd be wrong because it's the big discussion.
The big discussion, yeah.
Big discussion time. Time for the big video game discussion that comes this week from Cameron Keywood, who says, Helobap, it just got announced that Microsoft turned down the chance to have an exclusive license to develop Marvel games to focus on their own IPs. The license went to Sony, and the rest is history. Do you think this was a mistake? And would the Xbox Marvel games been any good, space, question mark? Cameron, come on.
Cameron, please. Did you also see that, this is a rumor, but it's being widely reported, that Microsoft also said no to the Knights of the Old Republic remake?
They didn't see that first,
apparently.
I have a write-up here.
Oh, go for it.
About some information regarding this, just to give a little bit of context. This is from Games Radar. Who wrote, as spotted by Reset Error using user Nightingale, an extract from The Ultimate History of Video Games Volume 2 by Stephen L. Kent reveals that Marvel reached out to both Microsoft and Sony with the aim of securing first-party deals. To them, three companies fitted the bill, Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. But as Nintendo primarily focuses on its own IPs, it was ruled out. Instead, they approached both Microsoft and Sony saying, we don't have any big console deals with anyone right now. What would you like to do? Microsoft's strategy reportedly revolved around its own IPs, so it passed on the offer. Meanwhile, PlayStation execs Adam Boyes and John Drake, that was worth going back for, met with Marvel, who laid out their lofty ambitions. We have a dream that this is possible, that we could beat Arkham and have one game at least, and maybe multiple games that could drive adoption of your platform. This led to 2018's PlayStation exclusive Spider-Man game developed by Insomniac Games, but not before Marvel had to wrestle the rights of the franchise away from Activision, which had been making Spider-Man games throughout the 2000s.
Yes.
This bit's great. When Marvel announced that they wanted to find a better home for Spidey, Activision replied with, "Good luck finding your unicorn."
Wow.
Given the phenomenal success of Spider-Man on PlayStation, it appears that unicorn has been well and truly found. As for Microsoft, it's fair to assume that it probably regrets not taking Marvel up on its offer. So this was quite surprising to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It is worth mentioning right off the bat that the only reason we are having this conversation is because Sony did so well with it. Mm. Hindsight is 2020.
Yeah.
Sony could well have dropped the ball on it.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was a gamble for Sony to take it, and it was a gamble for Microsoft to say no.
Mm-hmm.
We could easily be having this conversation had Sony dropped the ball, and it could be completely different. Like, wow, I bet Microsoft is glad that they didn't take the Marvel license, given what Sony did to it. Flippin' heck. But, you know, so we can't really... I think there's been a lot of dunking on Microsoft and Xbox over this, and I don't think it's really fair to do that because how could they have known?
No, yeah, it's not fair to say... stupid business.
I bet you wish you made the exact game Insomniac Games made, a studio that you don't own.
Mm-hmm.
But surely they've got to be kicking themselves a little bit given the success.
Potentially, yeah. Ultimately, it comes down to the quality of the product. Spider-Man was an incredible game. Mm. Activision, had been making Spider-Man games throughout the noughties, and a couple of them were good, but actually some of them were pretty rubbish.
Yeah.
So it's not a license to print money, a Spider-Man game. Or having the Spider-Man license. So, I don't think Microsoft were, like, really stupid to say no to it necessarily.
No.
I do think that Sony was the better place for it. It depends on your preference, your kind of game genre preferences. But if you like the sort of thing that... that Insomniac did with it, if you like your single-player, semi-linear... cinematic games, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for, then, you know, Sony have an excellent pedigree with that. you've got, you know,
Naughty Dog.
Uncharted, Last of Us, God of War. And you know, they've gone for they've purchased the Kena developer as well.
Yeah.
Because they know that that's kind of their wheelhouse, I think. So if that's the kind of game you like, Sony is probably the best person to have taken it up. Microsoft, I would say, arguably less known for that kind of experience. You know, they do pretty good multiplayer games by all accounts. I don't play Microsoft multiplayer games, but you know, that's something that they're not bad at doing.
And at the time, they didn't have a huge as many studios as they do now.
No, that's true.
Although in the choice of Insomniac did end up not shocking people, but I don't think anyone expected Insomniac to make a game that good with the Marvel with the Spider-Man license. And so there could have been someone in Microsoft stables at the, because this was 2014. So there could have been someone in Microsoft stables at the time that might have shocked us by making something really good.
Yeah. And that, the other thing I was going to say was, I don't think this was, well, I know it wasn't the case at the time, but Microsoft now own Bethesda. Hmm. And maybe a Bethesda Marvel game could have been quite interesting. You know, they're good at their RPGs, and maybe a much more open-ended kind of superhero game with the Marvel license, but with a big open world, bigger than New York City, or more varied at least.
Could have done a Punisher game from the people that make Wolfenstein, whose names I'm blanking on right now.
True.
It's like a sieve today, my brain. I can't think of them. But them ones, machine games. That sounds right. Maybe them. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they're called.
Yes. Ultimately, I'm... like you say, hindsight's 2020, but I'm glad that Sony went with it and produced an amazing game, or two amazing games so far, and we've got another one coming soon.
Yeah.
And then there's Wolverine to look forward to as well.
Yeah.
But Microsoft, if they'd known that they were going to have Bethesda, that could have been a way to go with it potentially. Mm. But I mean, Bethesda at the moment don't have a great track record, so
yeah,
it's not necessarily it's not a license to print money, just giving Bethesda the Marvel license. So what do you think?
Well, it's also worth bearing in mind that Microsoft, or I should say Xbox, weren't doing very well at this point in 2014. Their reasoning that they Microsoft's strategy reportedly revolved around its own IPs, so it passed on the offer. I have to assume that was just not right now, we're not interested response. Yeah. Because the Xbox One period was famously quite light on quality exclusives, or in fact, many exclusives. So Jenkins, his response to this was, in 2014, what on earth were they doing? It was like 8 years of no games. And this is a man who was on the Xbox platform for that entire time. While I wouldn't go so far as to say there were no games, it is a curious response.
Yeah.
From Xbox to say, actually, we're focusing on our own games now. And then fast forward, looking at it in 2022, it's like, were you working? Maybe Scalebound? I don't know, but that was external and then cancelled.
Was there a Gears of War in there?
There was a Gears game that 2010s? Came out in 2019.
Yeah, so that's still 5 years on. I mean, I know games take a while, but...
Yeah, I mean, Spider-Man didn't come out until 2018, so that's... Yeah. Anyway, it's a curious response. I'm interested by that. I also am just a huge fan of Activision's response.
Yeah, I know.
Just the confidence. And it also makes me think again, what will the football game landscape look like in 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Because EA clearly have the confidence to think that they don't need to put down the money for the FIFA license anymore.
Yeah.
But if Activision are like, good luck finding your unicorn, we've been making fantastic Spider-Man games for years. We don't even want it.
Yeah.
Go away. And then Sony turns around and makes a Spider-Man game that everyone loves, that sells tens of millions of units. And it's like, maybe we were wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what the future would, or what the present would look like if Microsoft had taken it up. We don't know what kind of game they would have made.
Yeah.
If it's a Spider-Man game, Sony didn't stray too far away from the kind of stuff that Activision were doing, just, you know, an open world kind of sandbox game. But they just made a really good one.
Yeah, it was clearly heavily inspired by the Spider-Man 2 game that everyone really liked.
And the Combat of Arkham as well, which of course goes back in the Activision games as well, you know, and Activision pulled from them originally too. It was just a refinement of a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance that if Xbox did take on the Marvel license, and we assume that they made Spider-Man because that's by far the most popular Marvel character, that game would probably look kind of similar. I don't know if it would have been as good, but it would have probably played similarly. I'd have thought you'd have to be an idiot to make a superhero game like that and not try and do the Arkham combat.
Yeah, you could say it depends which studio ended up working on it. But, I mean, like you say, no one could have predicted that Insomniac would be the choice for...
Ratchet Sony and Clank people.
Well, exactly. Like, you think, well, what do they... All they'd made for years before that was Ratchet and Clank and... they made something else as well.
Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah,
and
Sunset
Fuse.
Overdrive. And Fuse. But yeah, it's basically the Ratchet and Clank people. They're making Spider-Man. You can't put those two things together. Obviously, they didn't make a Ratchet and Clank style Spider-Man game. They made something very different to Ratchet and Clank, rightly so. So even if you say, oh, well, Microsoft could have put such and such a studio on it because they made this game and that was good.
Yeah.
Games come out completely differently, even from the same studios sometimes. There tends to be a general level of quality from one studio to another, but it's hard to know what could have been produced.
Yeah, would they have made something like The Avengers? I hope not.
Well, yeah, that's the concern, isn't it?
Sort of a live service-y kind of game? Yeah. I genuinely don't know.
No.
But I think that this is... sort of, obviously, it's a huge blow for people who only play on Xbox, but I think it's settled out quite well because Marvel are now handing out their license to studios they want to work with.
Yeah.
Obviously, Spider-Man being exclusive, again, it does suck for people who don't have access to the platform, but it ended up producing two really, really good games that are worth playing, and... we don't know if Xbox would have produced better ones or worse ones or of the same caliber.
Yeah.
But certainly as it goes, we've got a couple of Marvel games coming up. There's Sons, which is that sort of RTS game kind of thing that's being worked on at the moment. And then there's a couple of others in development as well at other studios. Obviously, Guardians of the Galaxy, loved that.
Yeah.
The Avengers is the only one that's been sort of a miss so far.
Yeah.
And, you know, giving it to Crystal Dynamics, I think that was a really safe bet, but they fumbled the ball.
Yeah.
So hopefully this trend continues where they hand it out to studios that are pretty much guaranteed to make really good games.
Yeah.
And maybe one ends up with Xbox eventually. Who knows?
That's the thing, you know, that it could be a win-win in that it went to Sony originally. They produced a really good proof that, hey, Marvel, if you give this license out to good studios, good games will happen.
Mm.
And then, yeah, now Marvel are willing to hand it out to various people.
Yeah.
Maybe one of them will be a Microsoft studio.
Who knows? Well, let us know in the comments below which Marvel license you would like to see an Xbox studio work on, and perhaps which Xbox studio you would like to tackle that. I'd be interested to see that. I still think, even though I plucked it out of the top of my head, that a Punisher game by Machine Games might be pretty good.
That's a good idea. I don't always think of the Punisher straight away when I think of Marvel.
I was just trying to think of a Marvel character who uses guns. I mean, Deadpool to an extent, but it would sort of have to be first person. So, and I feel like Deadpool works better as a third person character.
And there was that third person Deadpool game that
was already
a bit of a miss.
Yeah, some people really liked that. But
yeah, they did, but I played it and I wasn't that sure about it.
Yeah. Let us know in the comments.
Mm.
You can find us in various places around the internet. In fact, before you tune out, before you turn off, I'm just going to do this right now and jump ahead because we'll talk about it a bit more in a minute. But please go to the YouTube channel and please watch the return of Prove It. We did a live action Prove It. If you're unfamiliar with Prove It, it's the series that we did a couple of episodes of at Triple Jump, but we used to do at Vidiots, where we prove that video games can teach you any skill that you can then adapt to real life. This is the most ambitious one that we've ever done.
Yeah.
We've been taught by WWE 2K22 to become real wrestlers, and we went to a real wrestling school, and we were thrown around, and we proved that WWE 2K22 teaches you how to be a real wrestler. Go and watch it. It's out on the channel now. I think it's one of the best things we've ever made. Please, please, please go and watch it.
A lot of people who saw the weirdest games ever that went out recently were like, "What? Where are those? What are those wrestling?
Why are they doing suplexes? What is that?
What video have I missed?" Yeah. Well, it was a little sneak peek there.
A little sneak peek. Mm. It's out now. Go and watch it. Yeah. Where can people find us on the internet, Peter?
We've got a lot to read here because Ashton,
she's plopping all over the world.
YouTube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. Go to either of those to see our videos and our live streams. If you've got Amazon Prime, that comes with a Twitch sub in the bundle. It's no extra cost. It's just part of the bundle. So spend that on us if you like. Thank you, Lord Brotovich, Trailing Badger and Mr. Black for looking after our chat when we're streaming on both YouTube and Twitch and Facebook as well now.
And Facebook.
Twitter.com and Facebook.com/TeamTripleJump is where you can find us on social media for video and live stream announcements, video content, actual live stuff over on Facebook. There you go. Yeah, it happened. Mm-hmm. I promised it would.
Yep.
Thank you to Fraser for looking after those. We've also got a TikTok, tiktok.com/@TeamTripleJump. Mostly Fraser and Ashton over there doing silly things, and they're doing it well.
Yes, they are.
We've got a Patreon, patreon.com/TeamTripleJump. Lots of tiers over there, so go and have a look at those. We've got a website. It's triplej.mup. That's J-U.M-P. You can go to triplej.mup/discord to access our Discord, which is modded by Jack, Joe, Tori, and Hollowise. And to channel Ashton Matthews, if they tell you to do something,
very well do
If you want to listen to the audio version of the podcast, if you're watching on YouTube right now, you can go to triplej.mup/podcast. All of our VODs are uploaded onto YouTube, so you can go to triplej.mup/VODs. That will send you straight to our YouTube VODs channel. Mm. We've got a Cameo, each of us, triplej.mup/Cameo, to get links to each and every one of us on Cameo and go and request little messages and things. Please do.
Yes, I got one from James Jenkins for my birthday.
Yes, you did.
One of our live stream mods, Mr. Black, very kindly purchased a Cameo from James Jenkins for me. Yeah. It was phenomenal.
I saw it. It was a good one.
It was very good.
And lastly, from me, triplejumpshop.com. That will take you to our shop. There's lots of merch over there. And I suppose we better think about a new drop at some point. So
We're working on a new shirt right now.
We are. And if you follow at triplejumpshop on Twitter, you will get the drop on the drop when the new drop drops.
You certainly will. Mm. Well read, Peter.
Thank you.
Why not follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter at @ThatPeterAustin and @ScrambledAshton and myself just on Twitter @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Thursday being the joint stream.
Blazer.
On YouTube and Facebook. The other days of the week being the solo streams on Twitch. Next week is slightly different because there's all sorts of bank holiday stuff going on. I will still stream on Tuesday. Peter will still stream on Thursday. Peter will stream on Thursday.
I'm off on Monday, on just on holiday.
Yeah. James, I think, is going to stream on Wednesday or Monday or Wednesday.
He might stream on my Monday slot or maybe on Wednesday.
There'll be three streams next week, but there'll be no joint stream. So just be aware of that. What else is there? Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. We do the podcast every Saturday and we do shows once every other week. Well, actually, that's not true at all. I don't know why it still says that. We do shows all the time.
Yeah.
So come check them out. That's a hangover from the pandemic era where we were just kind of trying to fill the schedule a little bit because we couldn't do stuff in person.
One every other week.
Please leave a 5-star review on your platform of choice. It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. We've got a few things to talk about before we go. Once again, the Wrestling Prove It is now live. Huge thank you to HT Drake, Northeast wrestling legend, for taking good care of us, and go check out his school as well. All the information is in the description of the video. And a massive thank you as well to Ashton for organizing and coordinating that. Mm-hmm. Don't tell her we're being nice to her though, because it'll go to her head. And also Dan Happel and James Jenkins for coming along and helping to shoot stuff.
Yeah,
they were all extremely, extremely helpful. Had a wonderful time and made a great video.
Extremely Happel.
Extremely helpful. It's a Worst Games Ever week.
It is. It's Gorefield. Mm. So that's a little spoiler for you if you're not a patron. But I went out yesterday for patrons of a certain tier, and tomorrow for everyone else on YouTube. So go and have a look at Garfield 2, Worst Games Ever. I heard James laughing at his desk yesterday.
That's always a good sign.
I think he was laughing at the episode, but Maybe he was just maybe not. Slacking maybe off, just watching just
having a laugh.
YouTube or something.
I would. We have finally got the totals for all the Cats Protection League shirts that we have sold. Thank you to everyone who bought one. You should be getting them now / have received them already.
Seeing photos of them arriving.
We've been able to make a further £1,118 donation to Cats Protection because of the shirts that you bought. So thank you very much for that. You've done a brilliant thing. And you've got exclusive merchandise that's not available anywhere else apart from on a website where someone ripped the design and uploaded it because bots are bastards.
We had to send them a takedown notice.
We did. We did. Stole a charity shirt design. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And thanks again to our merch team.
Yes, and the artist as well.
The art was provided just for free. Mm-hmm. And the merch team said, hey, let's do this for not for profit.
Yep.
So everything, all the proceeds went to, or all the profits.
All the profits went to charity. Yep. So there we are. Finally, there should be a Quipscope available now for Sniper Elite 5. So that should be on your audio feeds and on the channel if you want to see video of it. We also streamed it, so you can check it out there.
Yeah.
That's everything. It's time to talk about the sponsor once more, which of course is Sniper Elite 5, where you hunt Tiny Peters in a big green field.
We had a great time streaming that. This week, I assume. We've not done it yet.
We've not done it yet, so the afternoon, but there we are. Okay, thanks for watching, everybody, / listening. You look after yourselves, and we'll catch you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.